What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Good morning, lads. How are you, Jerry and Owen?
You start the day with a good energy.
Good morning, Jerry and Owen. How are we doing, lads?
Yeah, good.
Off the ball, breakfast.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
There's no filler.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Best odds guaranteed on all Irish and UK racing. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
And you are welcome to episode 14 of the Racing Pod on Off the Ball with John Duggan and Johnny Ward. Remember, we're here every Friday with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews and crack. The first half of the pod each week is free to air. The second part exclusively for members. So be sure to sign up by going to offtheball.com/join. For members this week, we've got a preview of Saturday's action at Haylock and Wincanton and Sunday's card at Punchestown. So subscribe now for all the juicy info. Johnny, how are you?
I'm good, JD.
Sad week for racing with the passing of Maureen Mullins, 94 years of age, the matriarch of the Mullins family, and the late Paddy Mullins, his wife, and obviously the mother of Willie and Tom and Tony and George and Sandra.
Yeah, I actually recall when her husband died, Paddy. I remember texting Patrick Mullins at the time to offer him condolences or whatever, but I remember his response was more in celebration of the life that he had, and if you did that for Paddy, you could actually probably do it twice as much for his wife. Paddy was an absolute innovator. He was probably a man way ahead of his time. I love this idea of a man of very few words, but an absolute, like, almost like he was around before, possibly as a, if you believe in reincarnation, there was something about him that knew animals and horses just like no other. And there's all this waffle about behind every good man is a good woman and all of that, but she was such an important part of that operation, and she lived to such a good age. I remember Tony joking, the controversial Cheltenham that we were at, where the pandemic was breaking out.
2020.
She was at that Cheltenham, and his joke afterwards that the only thing she was giving out about was that Willie had all these winners and she didn't back them. And she was probably, what would she have been, like early 90s at that stage?
Yes.
And I only met her on occasion, but like, if you watch some of the, I don't think we have enough racing documentaries on TV in terms of like the horsemen of the past. And I think definitely the likes of, before they pass on, the likes of Kevin Prendergast, John Kiley, who are, I suppose they're an average age of about 90 now, or nearing it anyway, their lives should be documented because they've great stories to tell. But some of the footage of Paddy and Maureen going back to, I think Satanta might have had a documentary on the Mullins, but anyway, whatever the documentary I saw, she was such a beautiful woman. And you could see why Paddy, Paddy was a handsome man, but you could see why he was attracted to her. But she was, she rode, it was probably not an era maybe for female riders. By all accounts, she was a very accomplished horsewoman. But if you did meet her, the odd time I did meet her at the races, or see her, she was so graceful for a woman of, like, the last time I would have seen her, she was obviously well into her 90s. And she was literally hopping around like a woman in her 60s.
Yes.
And, I was just like sending condolences to the family, and Tony was saying that she kind of, her wish in later years was that when she would pass on, she would do it peacefully at her home. And her home was Dininga, and that's where it all began for that, I suppose, that
dynasty. The Kenny Carlow region.
Yeah, like near Gorin, proper race in Heartland. But if you haven't, if you haven't read Patrick Mullins, one of the grandchildren, his piece in the Racing Post.
I'll just quote
the, yeah, the start of it is just beautiful.
Yeah, and the bit in here as well. She was always elegant, never hair out of place. She was always interested and interesting from a different area, yet moving around entirely comfortable in this one. She had a smile, a laugh, and a twinkle of mischief in her eye right to the very end. They don't make them like her anymore, if they ever did. Born in 1929. What a woman, what a lady.
And it starts with, TikTok goes the clock. I'm standing in the living room in Dininga. The lights are off and the fireplace is unlit, but the room is full of mourning. I never knew there was a clock in here, but I suppose you wouldn't hear it over the conversation. I can hear it over my thoughts, though. The roof is low because the house is old. The couches sag because they too are old. The far one has groaned and cracked ever since I can remember. And when we'd all gather here in Dininga every Christmas Eve, we'd wonder who it would eventually give out under. My money was always on Emmett. I suppose it won't give out under anyone now. It's a beautiful piece, and people were texting me last night about how good a writer Patrick was, and he's one of these multi-talented people. But Patrick's lineage goes right back to her and Paddy, and there's a good story of I think it was Tony and Willie were coming back, I think it was from the races at Gorn maybe, which wouldn't be a long visit for them, and they'd been riding in races, I think it was Gorn anyway, and they'd obviously lost that day, or they'd lost a particular race, and Paddy turned around to Maureen in the front and he said, your sons are going to be the death of me. And it was your sons, not my sons. And look at the family they spawned. Like, I mean, Willie's dominance, and they're beautiful people. And she's, I missed the funeral today. She's a massive loss. But I feel today, you know, you've sad funerals, but this will be a real celebration of the life that she had. And she, you know, if you're struggling through life, she's an inspiration, and she always will be. And as Patrick said in the piece, I think about her and smile, as I always will when I do. And that's just a lovely way of putting it.
Yeah, well said, Johnny. And our condolences are to all the Mullins family, and our thoughts are with them. And obviously we're a month ahead from Cheltenham, and racing goes on, and William Mullins did a big stable tour this week, and you know, as life goes on, but obviously it's a tough time for them. They're grieving. So
I think the fact that there's racing at Gorin tomorrow is absolutely perfect. That was her local track. It's a real quintessential rural track, like literally in the middle of the country. And tomorrow will be a beautiful day to go racing at Gorin to remember her, because her spirit will be there. She unveiled the new weighing room in Gorin only the other day. Like, this is and life, you know, life wouldn't function if we were around forever, and she has to be celebrated there tomorrow. But it's so perfect that Gorin is racing tomorrow.
May she rest in peace, and as we said, condolences to the Mullins family. And we had, I suppose, the one thing I was, from a news perspective, I noticed this week was Michael Verney did an interview in the Irish Independent with Shark Hanlon, and I saw Aidan McGuinness in the Racing Post talking about the need to support smaller trainers more. And there's no slight on Willie Mullins or Gordon Elliott or the Top Jumps trainers, but there's a feeling maybe out there that there needs to be some kind of program to protect the smaller trainers.
Yeah, the numbers, the trainers' numbers are worrying. And like, anecdotally, whilst it's a first world problem, trainers will tell you they don't make money. Even Emmett Mullen said that too. I remember we had a press day there, was it last year or the year before? And he said, you wouldn't want to be in this game to make money. And he's exceptionally successful. But, you know, the optics for the, I suppose the thing for an owner is that if you, and we've been involved in horses, like it's very expensive as an owner. You might get 15 to 20% back of your...
It's a mortgage a month.
Input. It's a mortgage a month, and sometimes more. Like, I've paid training fees in 1 month on one horse of about $2,500. And so no wonder I was broke after it. Like, it's like, it's really expensive. So if you're investing that money, yet it's the trainers have had to absorb all these price hikes in terms of like cost, in terms of like feed, bedding, transport has gone way up. So they've had to take all this in. And I did a piece recently with Ryan McElliott, who's the head of the trainers operation and trainers organization. And he said, like, trainers are very reluctant to increase their fees because they feel that there's a risk that they lose the horse to another trainer. And that's a bad situation to be in, because I spoke to Gavin Cromwell recently. I think he increased his fees maybe a couple of times over his career, but like, it's entirely justified. But you know, as Aidan McGuinness said in that piece today, it's like, if you have money and you're an owner, you want the best. And I've had a horse of Willie Mullins for good reason. I've had a couple of horses that were essentially no good, but they were with him because he's the best. And this point has been made as well, what he charges is higher than the sort of run-of-the-mill trainer, and I say that very lightly. but it's not that much more. So, like, if you have a good horse, you will send it to him for good reason.
Okay.
And I don't know what the answer is, because, like, I love supporting. I think you should support local trainers if you can. Like, if you're from Galway.
So there might be a program at Galway, whatever.
Yeah, and it's...
I always think a good pot and maybe a certain parameters around a race.
Yeah, but, like, gee, there's a lot of racing, GD. It's not that there are... Like, Willie doesn't have a load of horses in the summer. He doesn't run horses actually until pretty much November, really. Like, so it's not that, like, and there's a good summer program. Like, Willie doesn't necessarily target Galway, for example. So it's like there are opportunities for other trainers, but it's kind of a bit of a survival of the fittest.
And yeah, Darwinism.
Yeah, and again, yeah. Like, if you haven't read Ado's interview, like, Ado is quite frank.
Ado is successful. He's a very good
Ado
flat
is successful. But he points out that, like,
on a long shot.
Well, Gordon started with next to nothing. Like, now Willie came from...
No, it took Willie Willans a long, long time to become a very dominant trainer. Like, his first Cheltenham winner was 1995. And he didn't have that many winners for the first 10 to 15 years of his career at Cheltenham.
He expanded and...
But success breeds success.
Success breeds success. His gallop, actually, I think the gallop that he eventually put in was a little bit of a fluke that he and his dad came up with, and he's admitted that it was kind of more, there was a bit of luck involved, but his gallop gets horses very fit, and definitely, like, if you have that many horses, like, can you imagine giving a horse individual attention when he or she is one of 200? You have to look after your family as well, and you're also a boss to all these people. So you put in 200 horses, and to be able to give them individual attention is next to impossible. So William Mullins is one massive aspect of his success is Patrick
and David Casey
and David Casey and Ruby and, like, John is it John Codd, all the team he has, like, there are clearly exceptional horsemen and horsewomen there. And if you visit the yard, as you have, JD,
yes,
you'll attest to the fact that there are a lot of nationalities there as well. So it's like,
it's a big business. It's a business. Like, ultimately, I think we can't lose the fact that this is business, and all business, there are some people that are more successful than others in it.
And people might knock the, you know, the fact that the government gives so much money to racing, but if you go to rural Ireland and you go to a place like Clough Sutton or Dunninga before it, and you see the amount of staff, the cars there, the people that are employed in a rural industry, like, you can make a case for it very readily.
Okay, so Goran Park, we'll look at the two big races there tomorrow on Saturday. Heavy ground for the Red Mills Trial Hurdle, a 2 mile race, a grade 3, 2:17, one of these mad train times for horse racing that they have nowadays for TV purposes. So what's up, darling? Dreaming's free, brilliant question, Doyen to win, and Langtree Lady. To me, it looks like it's between Lantry Lady and What's Up Darling. So the profile for Lantry Lady, Rachel Blackmore will ride this horse. She won by 14 lengths over the course and distance last March in this ground. I think if she's fit enough, she wins, but is she? And What's Up Darling, a 3 mile pointer who won in the point-to-point sphere, second behind Answer to Cave on a seasonal debut. Remember, Answer to Cave won last weekend. Then he won what turned into a sprint at Navan, and then he was fifth in the Royal Bond Hurdle at Ferry House. Been freshened up since then, carrying a stone more than the others. Do you see between the two, first of all, and who do you like?
I'd be slightly reluctant to say it's between the two for a couple of reasons. What's Up Darling is... He's one of only two geldings in the race, which is weird. And you'd think What's Up Darling is a name that you'd give a mare. But anyway, he actually is a Scirocco gelding. But he has to give a stone to Dying to Win. Now, Dying to Win is a horse who would probably make it a test. And now she might fall into a bit of a hole. But if he's slightly off his game, Dying to Win has a chance, because Lantry Lady, like, I'd be all over this horse if the race took place 6 months ago or whatever, not after an absence of 343 days and a first time tongue tie. Like, that to me suggests that there might be some physical issue. And now, she won the first day, she beat Silent Approach by 14 lengths, and Silent Approach is actually a very good horse. That was a best of luck to the Irish at Cheltenham Mares maiden hurdle just before Cheltenham last year, so like 11 months ago. Something About Her, who was third, won a maiden hurdle since, and she won by 14 lengths, Langtry Lady. And Henry said afterwards he felt that she'd need the run. But like, William Hill put up prices on this. We're recording this at 1 o'clock, and I think William Hill has cut What's Up Darling into 13-8 from 15-8. There's a bit of 15-8 available. I could easily see this horse going off favourite, because in light of that absence, as much as she has all the potential in the world, he's a horse that beat Di Capo in a Grade 3 at Navan. That's really solid form. He was beaten 7 lengths and behind Fire and Glory in the Royal Bond. It wasn't the strongest Royal Bond in the world, but he mightn't have been quite at his best that day, and it was still a very good run. So he does obviously have to give her weight, a stone as well, but in light of her absence, the market is going to, whatever goes off favourite in this will win.
Okay,
in all likelihood.
Okay, right.
Do you know what I mean though? Like, it's very hard.
Yeah, I know what you mean. The market.
A 6-year-old who hasn't run in a year with a first time tongue tie, who's taken on a better class of horse as well. So the market will get it right, I think.
327, the Red Mills Chase, 2.5 miles, Grade 2, Gorn St. Sam, Embittered, Ivor the Boneless, Lucid Dreams, and Riviera de Tell. Now, Riviera de Tell is a nice mare that ran last weekend, was second behind Allegri de Vassy. Hard to place at times. Think she'd be suited by going right-handed. St. Sam hasn't run since September. He's 7 now. I think he's a very good juvenile. Second at Cheltenham and Fred Winter, but lost his way a bit. I think he's been too keen in his races. A small field will help him. A course and distance shouldn't be an issue. I think if he's fit, he wins this. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think he will be fit. He can be quite a hard horse himself. I suppose the one thing you just note, the way trainers train horses here. John Ryan started
Lucid Dreams.
Meds.
9th run now this tomorrow since October.
Now, he is a 9-year-old, in fairness. So he started late in life. He started in March of last year. He's run 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. This is his 17th run in 11 months. And that's like no other trainer would do that apart from John Ryan. Though, to be fair, he's been very good. And he is a 9-year-old. So he's kind of making up for lost time.
Disappointed me now at Leopardstown last time. Lucid
Dreams. He was, but like you can't.
He's in and out.
You have to. He's going to be in and out if you run a horse that often. Yeah. I think we'd be in and out if you were running every second day. Do you know? Saint Sam.
You cycle every second day.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Sometimes. Saint Sam, you say going right will suit the mare. It'll suit him as well. He can jump right. He's a very good horse in his day, and
I still think there's something in this horse. I haven't given up on him. I think he could do something in the game.
Saint Sam. Yeah, he's only 7 as well. Like so. Yeah. He's obviously the last time we saw him, he fell behind Visionary, and that was in September. He's given time to get over that. He can be hard on himself, but Riviera Detel, I think she had a very hard race behind Allegory de Vassy, the Mullins train winner at Nace. Paul Townend was very good on her, I thought. She did run really well. I wonder if she bet her over 2 miles, and he probably will have the class. But again, I'm just watching the market because we haven't seen him in 153 days and we didn't see him since he last fell. Good races, and the two races, JD, they're like some really good winners in previous years. I always used to enjoy
Hardy that. Eustace won Hardy the Red Eustace. Mills. That was the trial for Cheltenham in 04.
And that was Desi Hughes, the late great Desi Hughes. That was his, he was kind of a creature habit with Hardy Eustace. He warmed up for Cheltenham by winning this under Conor O'Dwyer and won obviously 2 champion hurdles. Only passed away last week, was it?
Yeah, we might talk about that.
Yeah,
again.
We didn't give him actually.
Yeah, we'll talk about him again.
What a horse, but I'd probably go with St. Sam, but it's not a race we're getting heavily involved in.
Ascot Chase is a Grade 1 on Saturday, 3:35, 2.5 miles. Ahoy Senor, Lampresse, Pique d'Orhy, and Sail Away. The Sail Away is the outsider. Ahoy Senor can't have him ever. I think he makes too many mistakes over fences. Should be running the stairs hurdle for me. I think it's between Lampresse and Pique d'Orhy. Who do you like?
That's not a bad show with Ahoy Senor. Horse by Dylan Thomas, who was a sire that ended up being a jump sire and actually has had good horses. He'd be the pick of them. As you say, he does make mistakes, JD, a lot of mistakes. I think he'll set this up for the closers. Whether the market should be quite as strong in Lampresse relative
to
Pique d'Orhy.
Money for Pique d'Orhy today.
Yeah, but like he's, you
into
know,
2-1.
2 miles 5 on, we'll talk about the ground. Like there's a horse declared in Gorn tomorrow, Lark in the Morning, who has been, to the best of my knowledge, anyway, has been scratched twice because of bad ground recently. Tomorrow will be as bottomless as it is, so they must have a plan with that horse. But there is bad ground in Britain tomorrow, but Ascot is good to soft, which is quite an outlier. And that'll give Pique d'Orhy sort of more of a chance, I think, against Lampresse, because Lampresse goes particularly well on bad ground, but he's win over Protectorat. Protectorat's probably not quite top class, considering he'd been off for over a year the last day. I think it was a perfectly solid run. The Racing Post analysis summed it up afterwards well. It said, you know, it's not going to have like the likes of Gallop and Deschamps running scared, but it was a good performance.
Well, it had Pique d'Orhy running scared. Who are you going for?
I'm with Lampresse, but I think Harry Cobden will get Charlie Deutsch a little bit worried, I think, at one point, because Pique d'Orhy's a very good horse. He's going to travel well. The favourite just might outstay him in a race that, despite the small field, if he can stay up, which is a question mark, Derek Fox is going to make this a good test.
So Peak Tory for me, course and distance winner, Melling Chase winner at Aintree, where he'll go. Decent jumper, has won five of his last seven, ran into Banbridge the last time, so no shame in defeat at Kempton. I think he will pick up the pieces if Lampressé doesn't fire. And there's always a little bit of uncertainty for me with Lampressé, who's on his day a very good horse, won the 3 mile novice at Cheltenham a couple of years ago on bad ground. I do think, I slightly feel that he prefers going left-handed. He is course and distance winner now, but look, I think Hoy Senior in a way is key to the race in terms of how he sets it up. But if you're going to, I think it's almost like a 50-50 one, and therefore the price is Victoria, maybe a 2-1 for me. We're going to get into our free tire selections now. Johnny, make mine a double GA. We had two each ways. We had 2/3 last week in DeCabo Glory, who I picked up at 9-1, and you'd Union Station. Who'd you like this week?
Yeah, Union Station was actually a little bit disappointing. Finished 3rd for Gavin Cromwell. We'll talk about Gavin in the second half of the show. Gavin has a couple of runners in the Sea Moon and Jukebox, Jukebox Jury at Burgage Maiden Hurdle, which is a race that honours those two local stallions. Jukebox Jury has gotten some very good horses. This is a 4-year-old race, and funny enough, a lot of these horses, including Lark in the Morning, who I mentioned, a lot of these horses are flatbred. Barrier is interesting though for me. She is a horse by Australia. A lot of these will not cope with the ground. It's a very, very good race on paper. But Barrier ran very well the last day behind stablemate and Dowie, who I kind of fancied the last couple of times he's run, but he did come good. She was nibbled at big prices, and I think her proven ability to handle the ground will make her interesting. She could actually be an each way.
Where is this?
This is the 1st at Gorn tomorrow. So Barrier is my selection, 142 at Gorn.
So the 142 at Gorn for Johnny Ward on the Racing Pod this week. So I'm just going to go through it here. Barrier, Jack Kennedy.
Yeah, Jack's having an outstanding season. She does it, like, you're looking at some of the horses that are in the race that haven't run yet over hurdles. Club manager for Gavin Cromwell, who I mentioned last seen at Dundalk, but could be quite a decent type going over hurdles. A horse that did me a few favours last year, Pinot Gris, very interesting, but tongue tied the first time. Didn't find a lot the last year, might want better ground.
Okay, that's Johnny's pick for the free tire section, and make mine a double J Barrier.
Keep an eye out for Lark in the Morning as well, because running in the Mulwine colours, they must be aiming this horse for Cheltenham, but I can't for the life of me figure out why he's declared tomorrow.
Jack Kennedy and Gordon Elliott, Barrier is Johnny's pick. My one is My Silver Lining each way in the 3:15, the Grand National Trial at Haydock on Saturday, 6-1. This horse was a brilliant winner, this mare, of the Classic Chase of Warwick last time out. She's only got 10-6 in her back. I think she's in sparkling form, a great jumper. I can't see her out of the frame if she jumps around at Haydock. Maybe the race will come too soon, but I think My Silver Lining to double up each way with Barrier is a really good pick for tomorrow. So this is the Racing Pod and Off the Ball. If you're listening to the free version of the podcast, I'll be leaving you here, but if you're looking for more, including our analysis of the Saturday cards at Haydock and Wincanton and Sunday's fixture at Punchestown, go to offtheball.com/join to subscribe and get the full podcast every Friday with all of our racing tips, insights and stories from the week's action.